This is not what we want, man. Cut it off.
The Bahama Soul Club with Shigida, featuring multi-instrumentalist Kojo Ebenezer Samuels. Now, you have to follow me for a minute. It's called the Bahama Soul Club. I'm getting mixed up. Kojo is from Monrovia, Liberia. He used to perform with the Nigerian Fela Anikula Pokuti and with Cecil Taylor, the African-American pianist and poet. And Shigida, he says, means movement and drive and flow. Well, all right. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrecht Lead. It is Free Your Mind Friday, May the 23rd. And a lot's on your mind, I hope, because it's been quite a news-generating week. We have word that Shelley Sterling, the wife of our good friend, Mr. Donald Sterling, owner of the Clippers, or co-owner of the Clippers, apparently he has agreed to allow his wife, Shelley Sterling, to negotiate a sale of the team, a forced sale at that, in order to satisfy the demands of the NBA. So we'll see how that develops. If, in fact, the sale does go through, it will bring an alarmingly quick end to this debacle, but it does not necessarily address the institutional question that is raised by Donald Sterling's conduct. And President Obama is going to be nominating Julian Castro, the mayor of San Antonio, to be Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. And you have to, again, get out a little notepad here to keep track of what is going to happen. If he is confirmed by the Senate, he'll be the youngest member of Obama's cabinet at age 39. And if appointed, he will be replacing Sean Donovan, who President Obama is nominating to be the next director of the Office of Management and Budget. And Donovan will replace Sylvia Matthews-Burwell, who is going to be nominated as Secretary of Health and Human Services. So it's a lot of shuffling around going on in the president's cabinet. two big stories breaking at this moment. But what are your stories? 888-874-4888. Let's have a conversation about what it is you're thinking. And let's see if we can get as many calls in today as possible. Harvey from Berkeley, you're on the air.
Hello, wonderful Utrice.
Hello, Harvey. How are you?
Very good, thank you. And hope everything is good with you.
Trying.
Good.
To keep it that way.
Well, I'd like to talk. I don't know. Did you know that tomorrow is the March Against Monsanto worldwide? Did you know that?
No, I don't. Didn't know that.
Yes, if you go to, I just found out myself today. And if you go to Google and put in the words March Against Monsanto, I went to, and I clicked on, you know, and all the websites came up, and I went to the Occupy Monsanto website because that seemed to be working, and it shows, gives quite a bit of information. So that's tomorrow. And I'd like to talk about why I believe that Monsanto is such a bad player. You know, they are using American men, women, children, and their pets, dogs and cats. As we're being used as laboratory animals by Monsanto. And what they do is, if you buy with a debit card or a club card or a credit card or anything like that, they keep track of your purchases and then they sell that. That's a commodity. The information is a commodity these days. And they sell that to companies like Monsanto or perhaps the medical pharmaceutical industry, who keep track of all that information. So, for instance, if you're buying a lot of sugary foods, you know, they'll know that at a certain point you're going to get diabetes. So you're looking at your computer, and all of a sudden ads start showing up for diabetes medicine. And that's the way it works, you know. So the thing is we each and every one of us can be targeted, and especially on a medical level, to, you know, they can pinpoint what we're doing, and they can track their various products right down to the field through the barcodes there and see what we're eating and when we ate it and so on and so forth. So all this information can be correlated, and we are essentially being used as laboratory animals. That's why they don't want us to know. Well, that's why the food is not labeled, so that they'll find out the results and they'll make decisions based on that. So I feel that based on that alone, that we need to march against Monsanto, and I hope everybody will take part in fighting these people who are literally using us in such a negative way, and we're putting us in harm's way as far as potential disease and problems, genetic problems and physical problems.
Thank you. Thanks for your call.
Thank you. Thank you, Utrice. Bye-bye.
Take care. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Give us a yell. Hello, Dallas. Sarah, you're on the air.
Well, greetings to you, Utrice. Can I be heard?
Thank you.
Utrice, can you hear me?
Yes, yes. Very faintly.
Okay.
You need to speak a little louder, I think.
Okay, I'll turn up the volume. I'm on my head. Is that any better?
It's a little better.
Okay, Utrice, I do apologize. But greetings to you as well as greetings to the PRN listening audience. And I'll start off as usual, Utrice, by wishing you an enjoyable weekend. And I hope that you don't do too much barbecue. Are you going to be working Monday or are y'all going to be off?
Oh, working Monday.
Oh, y'all going to be off. Okay, because I thought y'all would be doing that holiday celebration thing. But
No.
Okay, so it's a regular work day for you.
Yes, for me it will be.
Okay, then. I will be tuning in. But, Utrice, free my mind today, what I'm calling about is there are several things that piqued my interest. And one of them has to do with this meeting that was called for in Europe. You know what, Utrice? Let me take you off of this headset because it might come in a whole lot better. So hold on.
That's a good thing.
Okay. Okay, is this any better?
Yes, it's much better.
Okay, sorry about that. No, what I was saying is that this meeting with these African heads of state, where they were called to Europe as if though they were recalcitrant schoolboys, with the French president sitting there, François Hollande, sitting there, and all of these African heads of state just sitting around there looking like a bunch of idiots, while they're being dictated to as to what it is that needs to be done in their country. Now, this is the thing that really and truly gets to me, and it shows you on a global scale how we don't have any power as we like to tell ourselves. Because here it is, if you have an internal issue in your respective nation, and if you want to resolve it on your own, which is what the African Union is supposed to be about, if France wants to get themselves involved in African people's business, then they need to take it to Addis Ababa or anywhere on the African continent where the African Union is headquartered, and that's where that meeting is supposed to be held. Why it is that you have to get on a plane by yourself off to Paris to sit around this table and talk to these people? This is what I found was very upsetting to me. And then to make the matters even worse, with the president comes saying, okay, he's going to be sending in 80 advisors, and we already know what 80 advisors mean. All it means is a bunch of mercenaries that's going in there into Chad, supposedly with drone technology to find these people. Now, I find this very highly suspect, you, Teresa, and I said before when I talked to you before, when these people start propping up these African nations and telling them who is the fastest growing nation, who's the fastest billionaires, and all of that, the same way they did with Libya and they did it with Nigeria, and now you see this stuff with all these bombs going off and Boko Haram is set up in there and blowing up things and all this other foolishness, it tells you that these people, they have a scheme, and this is all a block on China. They're trying to block China. I don't know if you had a chance to read this article by Pablo Escobar. I'm sure you're aware of him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he did a piece. I'm sorry, you were saying?
No, he files stories quite regularly. I read them.
Yeah. Well, if y'all get a chance to reread his piece that he did with RT, because this laid out the case very, very well as to what's going on here, you trees, because...
But here's the problem. On the one hand, you could say that it didn't look good for the presidents of Benin and Chad and Niger, the bordering states with Nigeria, to pop up in France to meet with President Hollande about an issue, a crisis that is occurring in Africa. That's mm-hmm. on the one hand, from symbolism sake, it did not look particularly good. It looked exactly as you read it. It looked a bit subservient. But here's the thing. There is a crisis, a huge crisis that so far has taken thousands of lives and over more than 5 years. And it is not that, where has the help been over 5 years?
Well,
the house is on fire, and what they need is help right now. And this is what I'm saying. This is not a pretty situation. There's no clean cut here. There is nothing that you could say is, just isolated by itself. It's all tied up together. The interests of France, the interests of Europe, the interests of the United States, they're all tied up in this issue of what needs to be done. 5 years have gone by, more than close to 6,000 people killed. We have these young girls who, hundreds of them have been taken. We had over the past couple of days, we had bombings that have claimed more than a couple of hundred lives.
Mm-hmm.
And it only appears that it's going to get worse. What do you think they ought to do? That's what I was asking earlier this week. What should the response be?
What they should have done is that, because this stuff was all being done on purpose, the people in Nigeria, in the northern part of Nigeria, they're being used as pawns on this chessboard. There are other nations that they could have called in there if they wanted help. For instance, they have places and they could have called in Cuban forces. They could have called in if they wanted to get help. They could have got the Chinese, because the Chinese are in there working in Africa. They could have even get the from the Russians.
If the Chinese are no different, and we have to be real clear about this,
no,
China
is
no different from Russia or the United States. It's an imperial power.
Exactly.
And, of course, you know, people think, the Chinese are communists and they have an entirely different view. They are as as capitalistic as you can get these days. And they have their eyes on Nigeria's resources. So it is six of one, half a dozen of the other. My question is, 5 years have gone by. Whoever wanted to offer help, there was 5 years that they could have offered help. And help was not forthcoming.
We've got to ask ourselves this question, Utrecht. Why is it happening now at this particular time? Why is it going? Why is all of this stuff escalating right now? Because what I'm seeing now is that you're seeing these Islamic groups, or they're calling it these Islamic terrorists. Now you're seeing the same thing that's going on in China, where the Uyghurs who are blowing up things in China. So you have to ask yourself that there are subversive forces. Then all of a sudden the United States indict these so-called five Chinese for espionage, and the people are living in China.
While you're asking all those questions, bombs are going off and people are dying and children are being kidnapped and the country is in a state of utter chaos. Look, from the outside, we can see a kind of logic and order to it. When the question is in the immediate situation, and I'm again saying we have had, this did not creep up yesterday. This has been going on for 5 years.
People need to handle their own business on their own. You see, all of this stuff is going on.
But Sarah, you're talking in the idealistic world. People need to do. We all should have straight teeth and get ideal weight. But that's not the way the world works. What
I know
Nigeria has is a president reticent to take action. We have a divided country, a fractious leadership, a military that is in close to mutiny. You have religious differences, you have super rich and super poor, you have predatory interests by outside sources looking at resources. They couldn't care if all Nigerians died. Mm-hmm. All of this is going on at the same time. And when you are at the head of a country, how do you deal with it? There is no pretty formula. And as I said,
if the African Union
had anything to offer, it has had 5 years to do something.
We don't know if anything what was being done. You see, the media is playing this up now as if though this is all disastrous going on there. And I agree, because one life lost is one life too many, and this is something that they're going to have to do. But what I'm seeing is being set up for a military coup to get this man out, this good enough person out, to put in a military regime which is going to be conducive to Western, to what the West wants to do. Because, as I said, it all comes back to them trying to play catch up to China, because for the 5 years that all of this stuff was going on over there, the U.S. was bogged down in Asia trying to disentangle themselves from Iraq as well as Afghanistan. Now they're trying to play catch up, and they're talking,
again,
using these girls.
From outside, we have all kinds of ways that we could look at the situation. I'm saying you have to appreciate the fact that when a country, as a country, is in chaos, okay, and that is not an outside situation alone. I mean, of course, we have outside interests that have always had predatory interests in Africa and in other parts of the world. The question is about internal methods of control and self-governance and the ability of Africa as a whole, African leadership as a whole, to really begin to turn the tide around on this cycle. This is a cycle. It's happened before. In the first wave, right after many of the countries became independent, we saw their very progressive leaderships assassinated and targeted for all kinds of really bad things to happen to them. But here is a situation. I'm looking at Nigeria, and I'm looking at the situation as it exists now, rather than getting to the historical point of it, because we could go all the way back to colonial times and pre-colonial times. But that's not what the question is. What happens now?
But what happens?
What needs to happen now?
The people need to handle their own business, because
they can't. They can't handle their own business. That's the whole point.
Who said they can't handle it, Utrey? Who is saying that?
Wait a minute. When you say the people need to handle their own business, that's been going on for 5 years. You understand? 5 years and more than 5,000 lives. Now, that may not be a big deal to a whole bunch of folks, but 5,000 people dying for no reason other than a country can't get its act together, it's really just absurd in this time.
I know it's absurd, Utrecht, and I'm not disputing those facts, but what I'm saying is that everybody needs to, if you call yourself an autonomous nation, you've got to handle your business, and these people, they could handle it on their own. They could handle, the Nigerian people could handle their business. They don't need the United States.
The Nigerian people handled their business when they elected this man, Goodluck Jonathan. The Nigerian people handled their business. It wasn't the best way to handle it, but that's the way they handled it, by rotating leadership from the north and from the south. And he is from the south, so the south got its turn at leadership, and what they got was Goodluck Jonathan. The Nigerian people have been handling their business by having democratic votes. That's what produced this president. And I'm not complaining about the president, because you have to understand, he has to be seen within the context of what you just said, what the Nigerians want. That's what they want. They voted for him in a democratic election.
I know they voted to offer him, you see, but you choose. But once again, what is going on in the African continent and everywhere else is that we are trying to take on somebody else's political ideology and try to fit it into our circumstances.
No, but you're not addressing, Sarah, you're not addressing the question. The question is, all of these things, I mean, you're looking at the overarching thing, and we can get into that. But that does not address the situation right now.
The
question is,
of tribal leaders, they have the elders here. That is what they're supposed to do.
That's what you think from the outside. That does not work on the inside.
But that's what you're saying. We don't know that we are getting limited information.
The information that we got on this program was from a Nigerian who is a journalist, who is a former diplomat, who has a doctorate degree. Now, he understands the problem. He understands it very well. He has experienced it firsthand. So we have to trust that somebody from the country knows what's going on in the country. We did not get our information from any other source other than the African Sun-Times.
No, I'm not disputing the man's credential and that he knows what he's saying, but the only thing that I'm saying is that at this particular time, with these girls that they're as using as their ploy in order for this, because I don't want them to happen to these young girls, and hopefully they will be found and they're all in one piece. But the only thing that I'm seeing is that this is something that's being used, it's being staged, because while they're busy running over there into Africa and come stay showing this fake concern for these Nigerian girls, we're not talking about the Indonesian forces that's over there in West Papua murdering and slaughtering those native indigenous people. And these are indigenous forces, black people, that's in West Papua, and these Indonesian forces, it's not played out in the news.
The point you're making, number one, is, I mean, we started off in Nigeria, now we're in Indonesia. Here's the thing.
It's not Indonesia. I'm talking about the West Papua, those people in West Papua where they're being slaughtered by
Indonesia. I understand that. The thing that I'm talking about here is, at some point, when the African Union and African nations decide to handle their issues internally, then we will see a change. But frankly, this is my estimation from what it is I'm reading. My estimation is that no African nation right now wants to take the lead. No African nation wants to step up and say, we will militarily take this on. And that's the solution. It has to be, it seems inevitable that it would be a military solution.
But if they have outside forces,
what are you going to do? Which inside forces? Where are your troops coming from?
We could get a consolidation of all troops. You see, that was the reason why Muammar Gaddafi had to go.
But no. Don't bring in these other things, sir. The fact is, right now in this instance, what we're talking about Nigeria, where do the African nations stand as a credible military force, a united military resistance against this insurgency that has apparently very strong backing outside of Africa? This is a huge problem. And again, people could see this from ground level and one way, but we're looking here at how you see a problem in terms of governing a nation. What do you do? Your nation is on fire.
In all kinds of ways,
it's on fire. You have all crazy things happening, and they are happening to a man who, you can't argue that he was illegally elected. He was very fairly elected. It was a democratic process. He happens not to be of the metal that the nation needs right now to combat this problem and other related problems, but that election fell within what has become the political custom. This is what I'm talking about. You have the short-sightedness of things being addressed immediately without people understanding the long-term effects. If Nigeria is going to be, and it is now, the number one economy, what kind of leader do you need? What kind of person do you need at the helm? What kind of system do you need in place? Is this it? Is this what it is? A guy who basically has no idea how do you respond to this? He doesn't have a clue. And even if he had a clue,
you know, the reason why he was put there in the first place, as you said, it doesn't matter
why he was put there. You don't understand the point. It doesn't matter why he was put there. The fact is, from a legal perspective, he was legally elected. That's what the Nigerians wanted. That's what they were, just like Barack Obama, that's what people wanted. They got him. Now what? It happened within a political system that said, that's what we want. Okay, you got what you want. Now this is a problem. How are you going to deal with it? And I don't want to come down on the man. He is no different today than he was before. He's a guy, he's an academic.
Exactly.
He's an academician. That's his stock of trade. He's a zoologist.
He's not a politician. So similar to Barack Obama, you know, you get these people that are showcased, as you said, selected
You're not focusing on your argument today. You're doing a gunshot approach today, and the idea is, here's a problem. Nigeria is in crisis. In fact, it is in meltdown. Okay, there is a huge problem. A huge problem now persists with this Boko Haram, but it is not the only problem. Who is going to fix it? How does it get fixed? When you tell me things, these officers, let the Nigerian people take, the Nigerian people have been taking care of this for 5 years. Look what it's got. So what is the answer? That is the question.
I'll say this and get offline. The way how I think this is all done, this is all being orchestrated because this is what they want, a military person running that country. This is being orchestrated for him to be put out of there. It's going to go back on the military rulership like they had before, and then everybody else, the West Arm, could go ahead and run things the way how they want, because these girls are being used as a ploy in order for this to happen.
We know that. But everybody's been used as a ploy in Nigeria. Everybody. This has become very dramatic because, of course, they seized on the girls. But the bombs went off in the market, and it's the women who run the market.
Exactly.
So, I mean, this is a question for all the nationalists. What is the response? What is a nationalist response in Africa to what is going on in Nigeria? What is the appropriate response? We're not getting it. That's the troublesome thing. And it is not an easy solution. It really is not an easy solution at all.
No, it's not.
So, thanks a lot for your call. You always give a very vigorous workout. Whew, I think I lost about 30 calories right there.
Let's try and relax for the weekend, and I'll listen in on Monday. Y'all enjoy.
Thank you very much, sir.
You're welcome.
Calling. Let's take this break and come back to your calls at 888-874-4888. A short break.
Everywhere. Jumping up and down in happiness. Shiggy dive a day everywhere. Shiggy dive a day now. Shiggy dive a day everywhere. Shiggy body, shiggy dive. Left foot. That's what Shiggy Dive does. Shiggy Dive. Shiggy Dive. Shiggy Dive. Shiggy Dive. Shiggy Dive.
What's going on in your neck of the woods? Are you doing your own Shiggy Dive, which supposedly means movement, motion, and what is it? Drive and flow, he says. 888-874-4888. Well, you know, so many things have happened, but this is your day. This is your day to talk. And I'm hoping that you have some opinions about things that have happened this past week, programs that you have a particular issue to deal with or questions about, or just opinions that you wish to independently offer for public inspection and further debate. This is what this is. It's important to have a forum where people feel comfortable talking. I mean, like that conversation with Sarah, that kind of stuff is great for the adrenaline. It's fantastic because it means you're conversing with somebody who reads, who is up on things, and who has an opinion. We go to Los Angeles. DX, you're on the air.
Yes. Hello, you trees. How are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for asking. Wow, that was quite a vigorous discussion you had there.
Yeah.
What I called in today about is, I didn't get a chance to call last week. Kind of in a way, I'm glad I didn't, because something occurred this week I wanted to speak on. It's a upshoot or an outgrowth from that Donald Sterling debacle. We have another owner in the NBA, Mark Cuban, owner of the Dallas Mavericks, who has come out with a statement, and I don't know if you've heard about it in the last couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you have? Okay.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah.
But you tell
him. Basically, I'm going to try to go word for word, but it's basically a paraphrase. He said that, there was much more to the interview that he gave than this, but he gave an interview and he stated that, among other things, he stated that we all have prejudices and we're all racist in one way or another. And if he was walking down the street and he saw a black guy with a hoodie on coming at him, he would cross the street and go to the other side. He then said if there was a white guy walking towards him on that side of the street with bunch of tattoos all over his face, he would again change sides of the street and go to the other side. However indelicately that he put it, his point was that we're all prejudiced in some kind of way, I guess, because I don't think Mark Cuban is a racist in that way, and I also don't think Donald Sterling hates black people. But I keep finding more and more ways to describe the mainstream mass media in this country, and I have a new one, and I think it's appropriate. It's like a basketball bouncing from side to side. And what I mean is that instead of going to the logical discussions of race and class structure in this country, they're going to the offshoots of the initial statements that Mr. Sterling made. Now, this is more ridiculous added on to the original ridiculousness, because instead of having a discussion about, you know, the Jewish community, as you pointed out, and how they're trying to probe for answers about whiteness in this country, and instead of having a discussion about what gives people these impressions, why would you change sides of the street just because a guy is coming at you and he has a hoodie on? What's at the bottom of this? And this is pervasive through our whole society. And one of the causes of this, I believe, there are many, but we have basically a system that is set up on the basis of systematic racism, as you know. I could point out many examples. The most obvious thing is that whenever you call something white, it has to be good, and everything black is bad. Black male, you know, I could go down the list. You wear white at weddings. White is the color of angels.
The only way that the black is good is on Wall Street. When things are in the black, is great. When it's in the red, it's not.
Yeah, that's about the only
black exception. Is beautiful on Wall Street.
But then they compare the black to red. So they're leaving white out of the equation. So, but not only that, but the media in this country, we should start examining, you know, these reality shows. We should start examining them all the way back from when they pretty much started. One of the first ones I remember is Cops. And we used to always say, well, why is it always black people that they're busting on? You see, this is why people get these impressions in their head and these prejudices. So instead of delving into that and discussing the long, long, long history of racism in this country, including the Jim Crow and even before that, you know, Reconstruction in the South and before that slavery, I mean, instead of discussing this, they're going sideways to the issue of whether Mark Cuban is now or is not a racist. And this is more ridiculousness, like I said. And where do you see this going to in the media? I mean, are we ever going to see any substantive discussion?
You're not going to get it. It's not going to happen because the media outlets, for the most part, are extensions of the power elite in this country. Whether they are conservative or liberal or dead center, doesn't matter. The fact is that they do represent the interests of the power elite, and they're not going to do anything to actually embarrass the power elite. We have to understand racism somewhat differently, I think, and that is to distinguish it as a subset of white supremacy. And racism, you know, the way we understand it, in its general application, we see it as, you know, people having awful opinions about other people and doing stupid things, their attitudes and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Supremacy talks about a system of power, and it's integrated in all aspects of life, and that's the whole the suggestion of the word supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
It was decided even before people got here that whoever they met here, they were entitled to completely, you know, just wipe them out because they were less than. Nobody came here with the attitude that we would, you know, seek a harmonious life with others.
Right.
Even
exactly.
Though they were themselves rejects from their own country. This is the thing that needs to be studied. What is this mentality that your existence, and I have described it variously also as the zero-sum thinking that goes along with this system, this supremacist system that says in order for me to progress, it means that you have to stay still. You have to be stagnated. And, you know, my progress is to be measured against the degree to which you are stagnated. My
There's
wealth,
not enough progress to go around.
Right. And it shouldn't go around. You
right.
See, then you get all these philosophies and all these things that literally undergird this impossibly, irrational psychological way of thinking. This business that there is an automatic sense of supremacy and you rule no matter what. I mean, Hillary Clinton is an extraordinary case of this. What really are this woman's credentials for the job? Did she take any classes in international law? Condoleezza Rice had to burn up about 20 tankers worth of midnight oil. And Colin Powell had to rise to be chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Yeah.
To qualify for the job. And
right.
Even people like Madeleine Albright had to go to school and study under all these diplomats and take courses and learn to speak two and three and four languages. Hillary Clinton just had to be married to a sexual predator in the White House. That's the qualification for the Senate. That's the qualification for Secretary of State. And it's now going to be, she's now eminently qualified. So qualified, people are begging her, a completely unqualified person, for the job.
Right. But you know, you treat
this goes with this notion that I'm a member of the club. And when you had talked earlier about the NBA, and I talked about what Donald Sterling gave us in that little snippet of the exchange between him and his mistress, was that he was telling her the rules of the club as he understood them.
Exactly. But
that is the story of America that nobody wants to
tell. I blame some of this mess on the black community and on our so-called black leaders, most of whom are either corrupt or just part of the system themselves. In this respect, the only conversation you get out here about race, is other people trying to define what racism is. I mean, like, you had a caller, it was last Friday, I believe, the guy who says he's a reformed racist. I don't know what
it is. Green from Baltimore.
Green from Baltimore, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you got into a great big discussion with him because he's trying to basically tell you what racism is and what it isn't. And so people have commandeered this discussion. I don't know what particular race he is, but if you haven't walked around in brown or black skin, what makes you think you know what racism is?
Well, he's African American.
No disrespect to him or anyone else,
this is a very interesting point that you're raising, and I'll tell you why. Because it will blow people's minds when people think that the only racists are white.
Right.
There are many black racists who hate black people.
Right. Yeah, yeah,
and who
exactly.
do things to undermine their progress.
Right,
they
exactly.
Buy, in other words, they buy into the narrative of supremacy.
Right.
I belong to the club, therefore I am different from you.
Right, exactly. And you know what? Another thing is, all I hear all the time from white people and things like that, not all white people, but people who have this problem with black people bringing up race, is that, well, black people are racist too because I hear them say things about white boy this and white boy that. Well, that's different because that black person most likely doesn't have the power to affect anything in that person's life. And that's where we get to the systematic racism part. We have to stop letting them minimize the systematic racism that exists in this country and stop focusing on individual racist comments and attitudes, because there's a big difference between me saying a comment about a white person when I'm not going to be their prospective landlord, their prospective employee, their prospective owner of their team or whatever. That's different than Donald Sterling, who is a landlord, and other people who are, let's say, CEOs of banks or bankers, people like that that can affect your life, employers. When they say something, then they have the power to put it in motion and affect your life. That's the difference. But see, we don't ever get that discussion, is what I'm saying.
That is the question, and that is the issue that needs to be addressed. A lot of the things that we call racism are attitudinal and institutional, but they do not understand them to be part of supremacist
right.
A supremacist system. They think that this is just somebody doing something bad or just being silly or being racist in a traditional sense. But we need to get some clarification on this thing called racism, because
right.
We have, I think, and it's largely, I think a large part of it has to do with the victims of racism themselves don't want to call it what it is, because
absolutely,
and
that's why I said a minute ago that I have a problem with the black community and I have a problem with our so-called black leaders, because they are not pointing this out, that there's a difference. You know, we need to make that distinctly clear and stop letting the mainstream media and other people that are part of the system commandeer the conversation about what racism is, and just totally ignoring, you know, systematic racism and apartheid in our whole system in this country. That's what we're not getting. You know what I mean?
I don't know where the courage will come from for folks to do it, but I do believe that we can't wait. Those of us who are clear about it need to understand that our job is to pass the knowledge on to people who matter in our lives, to
absolutely.
The extent that we can influence other people's thinking about it. But as
absolutely.
A country, it is so integrated into the identity, the American identity, whatever that is. You know, we have to appreciate, and many whites would not understand this.
Right.
We live
right.
in a bifurcated world. There are two Americas. I mean, even when it's said so in the law, you know,
right.
separate and unequal, people are not ready to accept that in fact is true. It is
mm-hmm.
true. And all these hundreds of years have passed, and the country has not moved one inch off of mm-hmm. that notion about what it means to be American and who belongs to the club. The club of
right.
power.
So and I believe that burden, the reason for that should go squarely on the shoulders of our leaders in these organizations like the NAACP and others, because I'm not picking on the Jews. I have nothing against the Jews. But one thing they've done is they've steadfastly kept control of the argument of what happened when Hitler was killing the Jews. They get all kinds of considerations. They get all kinds of acknowledgments. You can never forget it. You know, why is it not that way about slavery, Jim Crow, with our
people? Because this is not about a democracy. When it matters to you, when you take it seriously enough, when your survival and the survival of generations behind you, you feel a responsibility for that, then you approach life differently. African Americans,
uh-huh.
especially of late, have become soft. They've been mm. punking out on the whole business of struggle.
Absolutely, and I think it's more of a sellout. I think it's more that we've accepted these little gadgets and little money we make on our jobs. We've just accepted that, and we have accepted the fact that we're nothing but consumers, live, work, consume, and die. We've accepted that in our black community, and it's really sad. You know,
but
it's really sad. We
depend on leaders who are so compromised in many ways. And this is not to say that true leadership does not exist. It is just that it is rare. And
mm-hmm.
we don't have people dealing honestly with their community anymore. They are, you know, they are selected because they're pliable, they're amenable, and they go along. I keep coming back to President Obama would have outdone Bill Clinton in terms of the aggregate damage I mean, just widespread serious damage to future generations. And if for only if you only deal with education and what's going on with education, this president has condemned future several future generations of African American and Latino children to lives of just, you know, symbolic lives. They would have no meaningful participation in life. And this is an indictment, and people need to be real clear about that. We do have a history of people waging serious mm-hmm. struggle at the expense of their lives and their livelihoods, and that, it seemed to me, kind of dried up and in the 60s. After that, there was a huge campaign of co-optation, and we have people now, you know, I've talked about Frederica Wilson, who is the representative of the largest population of Haitians outside of Haiti in the United States. And all the suffering is going on in Haiti, all these Haitian people living in her district. And there isn't any sense that this lady is in any way moved to you know, appeal to the president, who she allegedly is close to stress family reunification, this business about the passage of the Dominican law that renders so many hundreds of thousands of Haitians and Dominicans stateless. All this stuff is going on. So we've had people's brains scrambled, who should be in positions of leadership to show the way. That kind of leader, I think, died with Adam Clayton Powell. That's it. After Adam Clayton Powell, it's just catch as catch can. Thanks, DX, for your call today. This is a very serious conversation that needs to be had. I think he's right. But I asked that question too. Where is this discussion in liberal America, in white America? Who is discussing this in white America? The nature of supremacy is, and why it stifles progress and growth. This notion that you get a psychological reward feeling superior to others, but it actually devalues you and it stymies your progress. But it is nevertheless a very powerful system that has been kept intact, relatively intact, since the day it was initiated with the landing of folks at Plymouth Rock. This is the root of the way America thinks and lives. We all are shaped by it. We all are affected by it and infected by it. To this day, you know, I talked about the fact most people think that the Civil Rights Act was passed in the 1960s. The first Civil Rights Act was passed in the 1700s. So when you look at the resilience and the resistance of this system, it's organized to such a degree to be self-perpetuating, because people have to buy into it and they have to propagate it and then they have to protect it. And the people in power have the means to do all three. They have the means to propagate it. They have the means to protect it. And so we live with the illusion that, you know, we're all one and this is America, the land of freedom and democracy and all of that stuff. At some point, that is going to become a very tiring and tiresome refrain. At some point, people will want to say, now let's quantify this. Let's look at the facts. And what therefore needs to be done to adjust it? Because we will have no future as a nation. We will continue in this dream-like state where we pretend at particular periods, we pretend even more that we're all one. And, you know, this weekend is one of them. They Memorial Weekend, we had African Americans and Native Americans and Japanese Americans and Latino Americans fighting for freedom and democracy that they didn't enjoy at home. Dying for freedom and democracy elsewhere that they didn't enjoy at home. We have them being exported to other countries to go kill other people. We talked about that and the opposition by Muhammad Ali, who was made to pay a price. He had to basically forego excellence, unquestioned excellence at what he did. His record, I'm talking about, as an excellent boxer, there's no doubt about that, and as an excellent human being, there's no doubt about that. But I'm talking about the way he made a living, that there was an authority that was able and had the power to say to him, you will not assume moral superiority over us. We can compel you to go kill somebody. And he said, no, you can't. He won. And in the end, as we look back, we can see, you know, the moral victory there. But the fact is that there was a power that superseded all other powers. It superseded logic. It superseded morality. It superseded even the law. And that's what we're talking about. This weekend, we commemorate the sacrifices of men and women and a huge population who never did enjoy the rights and privileges of citizens in this country that they gave their lives up for or put their lives on the line for. It's all well and good when the flag is dragged out and people salute it, and there'll be bands and there'll be choruses of the national anthem and oh, beautiful America. But there are many people in graves today who never saw that America in their lifetimes, nor did their children or their children's children. So on this Memorial Day, it pays to remember the fact that America still has to come to terms with its hypocrisies. The hypocrisy of sending people to fight for freedom, it just was not available to them here at home.